Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. As we probably are all still digesting our Thanksgiving meals, and we are all most likely still in the presence of family and friends, because this is a long weekend, remember, it's a good time to just sit back, relax, and listen to the podcast. Take a little me time and settle back and get ready to meet my guest, Mama Mish, or as she's known, Michelle Love. Now, I think this interview is so appropriate for all the cooking that happened this past weekend because Michelle is a chef herself. She's the author of Mama Mish's Dishes, Stories, and Inspirations, Food, Faith, and Fellowship. And our conversation did revolve a little bit around food, a little bit around community, a lot of it around how we can be of service to each other. But it also really filled me up with the idea that we can all be present and be of service to our communities in so many different ways. And Mama Mish has been present to her community in ways that are truly profound. You'll hear that a little bit later in this episode. Suffice it to say that I'm grateful that she's in the world. Now, Mama Mish's miracle is all about what does it mean to be called? And what does it mean to get a message? And how do you step into it? Or how do you run away? Because, you know, we do have a choice. We don't always have to accept what's asked of us by those energies, those spirits, those gods that we cannot see. So really, truly, this episode is about food, it's about faith, it's about fellowship, and it's about the miracle that we can all be in our communities, whether that involves food or not. You know, I err on the side of food, but food isn't necessarily necessary. So let's get to this next episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings Podcast.
I was in that room and I had like this transforming grace of God kind of swooped me up and said, I need you to be this person that I've designed you to be, this prayer warrior, this minister, this giver. But he was showing me how you do all these things, but we're bumping it up basically because people need me. It's all I kept hearing in my spirit. People need me. So I stayed in that prayer room for a long time. And I felt this transforming grace and power of God just took me from one place to the next. And it hasn't stopped since then. Faith, huge faith. I operate in the Holy Spirit. I believe in the Bible. I believe in Jesus Christ. And I kind of move about and go as the Spirit leads. So I'm what you see is what you get. I'm very transparent. I am very real. I am not what I say is what I mean. Who you get is who you get. There's no like other Michelle over here or other Michelle over there. It's I've been in all those arenas. So people who know me, they know what I stand for and they know what I believe in, but they also know I'm a real person just like you. And even though I'm called by God, I'm a reverend. I don't go around saying that. I'm just Michelle Love. I I go where he leads and I say what he says and I do what he tells me to do. So you're going to get real.
Well, and I would so love to know how you kind of were gifted the name Mama Mish.
Sure. Well, when we opened our brick and mortar, we started it back in 2016 and my husband and I were sitting on the couch. And I got Mish from Michelle. My mom actually shortened I don't know how my mom did that, but it ended up flowing into my children. All my children have nicknames now. And we were sitting on the couch and a lot of people called me mama. My kids' friends called me mama. A lot of people just called me mama. So I'm like, what about Mama Misha's Dishes? And my husband's like, I think that might be too short. So I said, well, everything we make is homemade. So we threw homemade in there. And that just, Mama Misha's just stuck.
And I'm curious, when you were a kid, were you fascinated by cooking and creating things? Like, how did that happen?
I grew up with an Italian grandmother and a Polish grandmother, two opposite ends of the spectrum. And I was fascinated when they were making Polish food. I was fascinated with my grandmother was making Italian food, homemade pasta, homemade sauce, wedding soup. She would make gnocchi. I mean, and then my other grandmother would make pierogies and gulumki. And I was just fascinated. So I was always kind of right there next to them. And then unfortunately, my parents split up when I was like 10, 11 years old. And my father is very artsy and very creative. And my father and I were kind of always like this. We still are. And so I asked him, I said, you know, Dad, I just feel like I want to be in the kitchen. After being with the grandmothers, which I still was, I felt this strong desire to create things. So he back then, you could drop your kid off at A&P with the checkbook and the A&P card and my two sisters, because, you know, I needed to be safe with my younger sisters. So he would drop me off at A&P when he had us every other weekend. And I would shop. He gave me an hour and he never told me what I could or couldn't spend, but I was very frugal. And I would just go through the aisles and create things in my brain and then bring them to, I never used recipes. I never measured anything. I still don't to this day. And so writing a cookbook was hard because I had to remake stuff to figure out how much it needed. But that's how it started. And so my dad and I would team up and he was a grill man. He still is. And he would say, how about if we do pot roast on the grill and you do the sides and you do the dessert. And so I would just create things. And my family was the guinea pig. But it worked out.
Yeah. It sounds like it. I mean, I love that your father just gave you carte blanche and said, you know, use your imagination. What a huge, huge gift. What a huge gift. And I think especially so wonderful because he was a creative himself. So he kind of, he was fostering that in you, that ability to kind of dream your dreams and figure out what you wanted to do. I have to let you know that for a long time, I was very, very strict about following recipes because I was scared it would blow up in my face, which sometimes it did, despite
sometimes
my best
it does
effort.
For me too.
Yeah, it blew up in my face. But, you know, everyone's, you know, now that I sometimes follow recipes, I know if I maybe add a little extra rice, it's not going to kill it. If I add a little extra broth, it's not going to kill it. And I think that's what's exciting about recipes is there is always that kind of arena to, if you make a mistake, to discover something new. And that's exciting.
That's the fun part. And I was always a queen of leftovers, taking something and taking, you know, this little thing and making it into something really fun for the kids. And when they were younger, they're not young anymore, but the grandkids love it too. So I would be excited about what I had left over from the meals that I was creating, because that meant that on Sunday I was cooking again and we were going to use some of those things. And God just blessed me with this creative mindset. And it's not just in cooking, it's in everything that he puts in my path. But I know there's a lot of people that are afraid of venturing out like that. And so when I had the cafe, I was training people and I was seeing what their skills were and seeing what their gifts were in our cafe. And we had a tea room, a cafe. It was crazy. And so it was really fun to watch the growth. I mean, I had people who would, I'd say, here's the recipe. give it your best shot. And you quickly learn who belongs in the kitchen and who doesn't. Who is there to clean up the mess? And who is there to wait on customers? And then who is there to cook? Because we had an open kitchen concept. And it was trial and error for some of these folks. And then some of these folks, especially the young people, they were tapping into skills that they didn't even know they had. They would be watching me or one of the other cooks or one of the other bakers. And they would be like, okay, I think I could do that. I think I want to try that. So we would just let them jump in, both feet, both hands, just jump in. I'll move out of the way and you can take over. And my youngest daughter has the gift too. So she started in the kitchen with us too. And to watch her gifts in cooking and baking flourish. And my middle daughter's figuring, she's getting married next year and she's figuring a lot of things out now too. So to watch your children flourish in their gifts in different ways is what we're called to do as parents. You know, we're not supposed to squash their dreams. We're supposed to help them make their dreams come to life.
I love that. I'm ever so curious. What is, I don't know, what your favorite dish that you've created?
Everybody asks me that. Oh, so many. I would say the dishes that I'm creating now for hubby and I, because we are on a healthy living plan to clean out the gut. We've been on it for almost 3 months. So I've gotten very creative with fish and a lot of vegan things. And I made this dish with cauliflower and gnocchi, heirloom tomatoes, spinach, pesto, avocado olive oil. And there were other things in there. I can't remember, but it was just putting it all together, mixing it all. Oh my God, it was so delicious. So I've been getting really like creative with fish and fresh chicken and things like that. I lean towards the vegetable side, but I do love fish. So just grilling and baking and searing and the smells that come out of the kitchen when you use natural herbs and you use fresh, you know, fish and poultry and shrimp. And we're from Maryland, so we use crab meat too. So I've been having a lot of fun creating those dishes. They're probably my favorite right now because they're healthy.
No, totally. And I love that you err more on the side of vegetables, because I think most of us don't get enough vegetables, frankly, mm-hmm. and they are delicious. I think mm-hmm. my favorite way to eat vegetables is in a soup, because it's kind of like a stealth vegetable mm-hmm. and you don't really know that it's, maybe you don't know what's in there, or perhaps, you know, you're like, this is really healthy, but it's actually delicious.
Yes.
You know, and
people don't realize that.
Yes. Yes. I was just thinking to myself when you were telling me these stories about your food, I was just thanking God that I don't live close to you, because I would be addicted and have to be over there all the time, being like knocking on your door and like, what's today?
But don't worry, people do.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, I have worked in restaurants off and on since I was 16 and I started busing in high school, and they can be places of high stress intensity. You know, a lot of the chefs that I worked with were recovering alcoholics or were alcoholics. It is a place where you really build a family, because you're working together, you're in it. You know, when you're in the weeds, you've got each other's backs, hopefully, and you're just there to like provide good service, delicious food, and get through the night or the day, whatever shift you're working in the establishment. But all that to say, you know, the major work, the big work, is on the owners of these places, because they're having to juggle so many balls depending on all the different positions. Maybe someone didn't show up for work, or maybe a delivery didn't get made, or what have you. So, I mean, the biggest stress, I think, are on the owners. So I'm just wondering, how did you get the bravery?
You know, you already know the answer.
I mean, honestly, because it is no joke. It's almost a 24/7 job when you open your
own. It is. I had worked for corporate in the food and beverage industry for a long time. This is my second small business. I had one back in 99. That's actually how I met my husband. And I went into corporate because the laws were, the regulations were changing. It's when ServSafe came out and there was a lot of classes. And so I decided to go into corporate and work for others. And in doing that, I realized all of my creativity and all the things that I brought to the table were being taken and used and everyone taking credit for it. And it started to get really hard for me. So my husband said in 2016, let's start branding this and let's do it. So all he has to do is give me the green flag and I'm out. I'm gone. I'm there. So within 3 months, I retired from my corporate job. And in that time period, we were saving lots of money to be able to pay cash for everything that we had to do. We found a spot and it was all covered in prayer. It was prayer. I mean, I remember the spot we found. We knelt down on the sidewalk, both of us, and we just started asking God for his blessings. We asked God to flourish this place with people, to grow the place, because there were spaces next to us. And the Lord showed me in a vision, we would take the whole thing, which we did end up doing. So we walked this out. I walked this out every day with God, knowing what to do, because of course, COVID hit in the middle, smack dab in the middle of us having the business, which was a huge wrench put in everything, because you didn't really know what you could do, what you couldn't do. And the regulations were changing all the time. I lost all my staff because they had little kids. They had parents that lived with them. No one knew. There was so many question marks above your head when all this went down. So I said to everybody, I'm going to go in the venue and I'm going to just pray. So I walked the venue, then I walked the boutique, then I walked the cafe, because we had just built the venue 3 months before COVID hit. So all the parties we had booked, all the money we had taken in, we had to give back. So that put a little hole in our pocket. So I said to my husband, God has a plan. We're going to follow it and we're going to do what he says. The first thing he says to me to do is you're going to give. You're going to be a giver, and I'm going to lead you. Well, we ended up giving to thousands of senior citizens, hospitals, doctors, police stations. And then it was the children that were graduating from college and high school that year, and even like graduating from fifth grade and eighth grade. So the Lord showed me, we're going to send them all lunch. We're going to send them all a little token for the graduation. We're going to send them flowers. And I said, all right, Lord. So I put it out there on our Facebook page and everybody responded. I'll do the flowers. I'll drive. I'll deliver. We represented 69 schools and 270 graduates, all not just Maryland, Pennsylvania. We went as far as North Carolina. We had drivers and it was incredible. So when the Lord said, you're giving through this season, I said, well, there's no lack in heaven. So we're just going to do it. So as a business owner, you have to be ready for change. You have to be switching things up on a dime. You have to be creative and you have to at least have a few staff. It was two of us left in my shop after COVID hit. And I looked at her and her name is Pammy. She's like one of my best friends. And she said, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. I mean, we were on television several times. We even gave away a free wedding. We gave a free on Valentine's Day. We were crazy. We did so many off the wall things. People were like, who is this person? And what does she know that I don't know? And I said, I just listen to God and how he leads. I obey and I follow. And if God's out of the box, you know that. I just do what he says. I don't even question it. I'm just like, okay. We got this. I would go back to my girl. Eventually we started having staff again. I would go back to my girl, Pammy. I'm like, we're doing this. And she'd be like, okay, let's do it. And that really changed a lot in me. Like the scripture kept coming to my mind. I could do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And if God leads you to it, he'll get you through it. And so we thrived in COVID. We thrived when we closed. And I'll tell you that later, but when he told us that we were closing, but you just have to stay focused. You can't focus on what you don't have. You focus on what you do have, because there's resources all around you. You just got to figure out how to use them and use them to the best of your ability and be creative and stay positive. Definitely stay positive.
Yes, and also I think have a really fabulous partner in crime, best friend, who's there along for the ride and says yes to everything.
That is true. And she's still my partner in crime.
I love
just
that.
New adventures.
I love that. Well, you know, the second question of my podcast, and I'm intrigued by this, is did you grow up in a religious household? And what did that look like? And if did it evolve over time, or how did it change or shift in your life?
I grew up Catholic. I have nothing against Catholics, but I didn't understand a lot of things. I went to Catholic school too. I was the Catholic school girl who was asking all the questions. Where is Jesus now? Nobody ever answered me. Why do I have this little book called the Bible, but we don't open it. I only use it at communion. And I had so many questions. So people got tired of me asking questions. And so I just kept walking out my years in Catholic school. And I did not even accept Christ until I was in my early 30s. But people thought I was saved because of my demeanor, because I was always a giver, always giving. And when the church that I ended up doing this grand opening for a church, and they invited me to their church, and I was there for like months, and I was in this small group meeting, and they kept talking about salvation. And I was like, what does that mean? And they were all like, oh my God, Michelle is not saved. And I'm like, again, here I am asking questions again in my 30s. Somebody please answer me. And these ladies all answered. And before you knew it, I was accepting Christ. And that was all she wrote. And that was 23 years ago. But growing up, I wanted to know, but nobody would tell me.
That's so interesting, because I've had plenty of guests on here, and in their journeys, quite a few of them were the ones who asked the questions when they were kids. And I think kids are naturally curious. They're naturally, you know, in love with the world, and they want to understand more about it, and maybe to become more deeply invested in the world. And it's always this really kind of painful experience for them when, you know, they're rebuffed, or they've said, you don't have to worry about that, or, you know, that's not a question that we ask right now. It's always been this kind of experience where it marks them forever. And they know that there are some places they can go, and apparently some places that they can't go. But especially in a you know, religious setting where there's community, belonging, conviviality, fellowship, and then they're told, no, you can't ask this question. One of the things I love most about kids is that they're so curious and they're kind of in love with the world. I mean, I love the story that your daughters are so into cooking, and that's born out of curiosity. And also probably what you modeled for them, which was, you know, the heritage the line of your grandmothers, and the cooking and the passion and the respect for the dishes and for the history of the food and where it came from. I mean, those are all such powerful, powerful examples to bestow upon your kids. So I'm not surprised that they were like, sign me up. How can I follow you and learn more or have fun with this? But yeah, it's definitely been one of the hallmarks of quite a few of the people I've interviewed, that when they were kids, they asked questions, and then you learn very quickly, oh, you can't ask some questions, which I think is a bummer.
Yep. I do too. Yep. I did not do that with my kids.
Yeah.
I wanted them to know that their questions mattered, their opinion mattered, their thoughts mattered, and watching them advance in their adult years, mm-hmm. seeing that they have a voice. I really wanted them to be a voice, and I really didn't want them to be quiet about the things that they had passion about,
yeah.
and things that mattered to them. And watching them in their adult lives now is beautiful, because you know you had a little bit to do with that. Do you know what I mean? God gets all the credit, but I had a little bit to do with it. Did I do everything right as a mom? Oh, heck to the no. Any of us? You know, there is no book when the kid shoots out of you that says, okay, here's your manual. So you go ahead, you go be a mom, because it's hard. Oh my goodness. Being a new mom, I'm watching the kids now be moms, and, you know, and they're just like, mom, how'd you do it? I'm like, just breathe, breathe, say a prayer, and you'll be fine. You know?
I do think being a mother is one of the most challenging professions on the planet. You know, one of the questions I was always afraid to ask was, yeah, I loved to bake and make bread, one of my mm-hmm. favorite things, but also pastries and all sorts of things, until I found out I had celiac and then I could no longer do it, which is like such a huge bummer for me. I know. I bought this beautiful bread book to make all these breads, and I started working my way through it, and then I found out I can't. It was such a bummer. Can't even tell you. Plus also, you know, the smell when the bread is rising. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Or when it's, you know, when you have a beautiful loaf that's covered in olive oil and it's still rising, and it's just like, it's so beautiful. There's something about it that is just so
yes.
beautiful. It's like the world is perfect in that moment.
Yes. The smells, oh yeah, I'm with you. I can't have bread right now, but yes, we're not eating gluten. We've cut out gluten altogether. And I feel better, but I will have to share with you some of the recipes that I have that are bread recipes with gluten, that the bread is pretty good.
Really? Okay. I would love that. I'd love that.
I'll send you some.
You know, you have a cookbook. I mean, mm-hmm. how did that come about? Was that scary? Was that nervous? Was it nerve-wracking putting yourself out?
Petrified. I was petrified. For starters, I don't ever sit more than 10 minutes. Like in the cafe, I was bebopping around. My hands were in 17,000 things because we had a boutique, we had a catering company, we had a ministry, we had the tea room. It was insane. I was insane. And God spoke to me the beginning of 2023 and said a new season is coming. And I knew it because I was standing outside on my deck and the wind was like whipping both ways. And I could hear him telling me the seasons are about to change. And I knew exactly what that meant. So I came in and I told my husband, because I always hear God, and we live on the water in the woods. And I always hear him out there really, really beautifully. He just drops things in my spirit. And I came in and my husband said, I can't tell your face. You look sad, or you look relieved, or you look joyful. I don't know what it is. And I told him, I said, we're closing the business this year. He said, hallelujah. Because he never saw me. And you know, the older I get, the harder it was standing on my feet for 12 hours a day. And staffing was ridiculous the last couple of years. I think everybody's going through that. And he said, when? And I said, I don't know. I don't have that yet. I'm not to announce it. I'm just to tell you, not to tell anybody else, because it's January 2023. And we had things booked all the way till the end of the year, weddings and events and, you know. So I prayed a few more months and I kept it with me and my husband. And then all of a sudden in, I would say, August, the Lord showed me December 24th was our last day open. So I went public and I did a live, and I wrote a letter with God in my journal. I was sitting on the beach when he gave me the date. And so we closed. This is leading to the book. So it was bittersweet. I was lost, a little bit lost when we closed. It took us about a month to get all the spaces cleaned out. Other businesses moved in, which made me very happy. And I sat down like the end of January and the Lord said, we're writing a book. I'm like, what? I don't know how to write a book. Yes, you do. You have me. Are you serious? I'm asking God if he's serious. I was like stressed and tense and nervous, and I had no idea. So I sat down, I went away for a few days by myself, turned off the phone, had just the laptop on. And I said, Lord, I don't know how to do this. He said, I'm going to show you. And he told me all the things to bring. He said, pull all your recipes out of the recipe box. And now I'm old school, so they're all handwritten. They have food on them. Some of them are barely visible. So he was told me, categorize the recipes. These are your chapters. I mean, it was so God. And then he said, we need pictures. When you're writing a story and you're doing a devotion. So there's actually the recipe, the story, and the devotion. And I'm like, what? That's a lot. That's a lot of writing.
I do have to say that I'm looking at your cover right now, and it's beautiful. And what I love about it, but also on your website, you have your somewhat of a similar image. Everyone's toasting. What I love about it is that it speaks to me of belonging and friendship and joy and coming together to celebrate and just be in each other's presence, mm-hmm. and celebrate each other, celebrate friendship, celebrate delicious food, yes. laughter, conversation, story. And that image, it's so iconic, right? Because it reminds me of this. We're going to go back to, there's this Catholic icon that I love because it's very mysterious, and it's three women sitting around a table, one here, one in the back, one on the other side. And then there's an open space at the end of the table. And someone explained to me, oh, that's the place, that's where you are to sit, because that's where you are welcomed. And I yes. thought this image has that, you know, yeah. it's like you're sitting at the opposite end of the table and you mm-hmm. belong, that mm-hmm. you are a part of this celebration, that you're a part of this dinner. And I think it's yeah. so evocative and beautiful. So good work.
Thank you.
I mean, that image worked the way it was. It came out the way it was meant to. It's really gorgeous.
Thank you. Well, our motto was always food, faith, and fellowship.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of pictures. We threw them out on our social media and we kind of said, what are you guys thinking? And I realized that people were going for, we had one picture, which was the empty table, no one around, no food on the table. And it was the image to me of like, some people were like, it's what can be. And I'm like, I'm not about what can be. I'm about what is. And the picture we chose was saying gathering, food, faith, fellowship, everybody coming together. And so I had a lot of people mad at me because I didn't choose the one picture was gorgeous. It was just, it was the setting. It was the fireplace. It was beautiful, but there was no people in it. And that's really not what I'm about. I'm about gathering people together. And that's what that picture to me was. And was it the best? I don't care. Was it saying what we are? Yes, absolutely.
I really appreciate that because, you know, I do think more and more people are longing to belong and longing to be invited to places and longing to be part of something, part of a community, part of a group or part of a larger group. But that is, those are the ties that will save us and save this world is coming together and accepting people in as they are and yes. telling them that they are part and parcel of the web of life, but also this community that we're hopefully building. So what a gorgeous image, what an iconic image, what a welcoming image, you know, it's kind of inviting the reader in, and that's, it's perfect for the cookbook, right? Because then you can open the cookbook and you're like, yay.
I have people that use it as a devotion every night. Yeah. Like, really? And they're like, yeah, we already know the recipes are good because we've had your food. All the food in there was from the cafe. or the tea room. Some of it was from the tea room. So everything that's in there is about what Mama Mish's has been and will always be.
Yes. And I have no doubt that all the recipes, and I mean, I'm sure everything is fabulous, and just bringing people together is really important. I have to tell you that some of my most favorite memories are when things went catastrophically wrong with my food. And I mean, one example was I went to my ex-partner. This is years and years ago, because I'm older, and his mother was serving. It was Thanksgiving, so she was making the whipped cream and making it by hand, and it was going to be fresh and delicious. And then, you know, we serve it on everything. You know, people have ice cream or they have pie or whatever, and we all, you know, people start taking bites and they're like gagging because instead of sugar, she used salt.
Oh no!
And so it was the worst tasting whipped cream that you've ever had in your life. But we could not stop laughing. And so it's those kinds of stories. I mean, they really, you can say, oh my gosh, remember 5 years ago, or remember 10 years ago when that ridiculous thing happened. They really do bring people together. So even if it's not quite right, or if it goes catastrophically wrong, it's still an incredible memory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people remember the jovial times when there's a botch in the kitchen. I mean, gosh, we would have botches in the kitchen at least on a weekly basis. And then we put this big bowl of whatever it was on the counter. We'd say free to anybody who'd like it. We had a little blooper in the kitchen and it would bring people in and we'd start talking and they'd be like, what happened? What was this supposed to be? And it's a conversation starter and it gets people laughing and it gets people building relationships and coming together even over a catastrophic food dilemma, you know. And I'm a fan of whatever, just make it again, or let me taste it, or, you know, we can work with this. Cause you know, I used to have employees that would just throw things in the trash that didn't work out. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you know, that costs money, right? Like you're throwing money in the trash can. And so I taught them how to repurpose. I mean, we didn't pull it out of a trash can, but I taught them how to repurpose when there was a blooper. If there was anybody who could repurpose anything, it was me. And I'm not about to this day throwing food out, because, you know, there was a time in my life when I had divorced my children's father and it was hard. It was hard being a single parent. I actually hated it. And I had to figure out dinner many times. And everything was usable. Everything was a resource that if you use your creative mindset, you can create something beautiful. So my kids ate things that they were like, Mom, this is so good. But unfortunately, I couldn't remember everything I put in it because I was just cleaning out the pantry. They would like be asking for it again. And I was like, I'm going to wing it and we'll see how that goes. But I'm not sure I remember everything I put in it. But I've gotten better with that over the years. I have to say, I've gotten better with that over the years.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Well, you know, I would love to ask you the central question or the main question of the podcast, which is I would love for you to share a story or stories. It could be more than one of something in your life that you experienced or thought of as magical or miraculous or even mysterious, something that that kind of changed your life or made you think about the world in a different way.
Okay. I probably would say it was probably through COVID. We were experiencing a lot of people who are feeling hopelessness, kind of like what's happening now. There's a lot of people that are just really feeling hopeless. And there's too much bantering and division right now in the world, in the nation. You know that. Everybody knows that. And there's darkness. So I feel like when COVID hit, we had a lot of people coming to us, and God really bumped up the ministry that we do for teaching the word. And I realized at that point that I needed to have a stronger relationship with God. And in order for me to be able to speak the word and give people hope and pray over people, especially people who needed healing, I couldn't do it unless I was completely aligned with him, completely. And I'm still in that fate. I mean, I'm still doing that today. And so we built a prayer room that was right off of our tea room. And it was beautiful. I had this vision of like a log cabin. And my husband's a carpenter. So I just give him the vision and he takes it from there. And he built exactly what the vision was. And I was in that room and I had like this transforming grace of God kind of swooped me up and said, I need you to be this person that I've designed you to be, this prayer warrior, this minister, this giver. But he was showing me how you do all these things, but we're bumping it up basically because people need me. It's all I kept hearing in my spirit. People need me. They need my son to get to me. So that's what I need you to do. So I stayed in that prayer room for a long time. And I felt this transforming grace and power of God just took me from one place to the next. And it hasn't stopped since then. Because I came out of that room and there was a confrontational customer in the cafe because I could hear her yelling. It was very strange. And I thought, okay, well, that's the devil tripping me up from what I just came from, you know? So I walked into the room and I kind of just laid hands on her and I said, peace be still. And I just held her. And it was this transforming moment for her. And I realized something happened to me in that prayer room. Like I had healing in my hands and I had this appreciation and this yearning for God's people to understand that he is real and he is working through us who lay down everything and receive him. And that kind of was the start of people coming to me and people, you know, showing up in the cafe and showing up in the tea room and distraught and me taking them in the prayer room, sitting with them, praying with them, laying hands on them and understanding that the ministry that God wanted me to continue was about to change. And it was happening already. So that was I wasn't scared. I was just, I get more nervous about not doing it God's way. So communicating with him all the time, that grew in me, which grew the business, which grew a ministry in there. That's how the ministry got started. You know, with people saying, I need to get in the prayer room. And when we took the prayer wall down, when we when we moved out, there were I still have them, thousands of prayers on the wall in there. And I would go in there every day and lay hands on them and pray over them. And then we started hearing testimonies of God answering those prayers. And I mean, I'm hoping one day we have some space somewhere to have that prayer room because we still have all the pieces of it, but we're really hoping that we can build that prayer room again.
I think that is just an astonishing story. And what I think is really powerful about it is that, you know, you have this experience, you leave the prayer room, and then there is someone right there that needs
God does not play around, does he?
Nope. And also, I think I was already thinking to myself, my goodness, your stories about just going out earlier in the interview about going out and working or giving to all of those graduates and those school kids and all of those other people. I mean, that was absolutely astonishing to me. And I'm sure required an incredible amount of energy and creativity and steadfastness. And it means you show up every day. And for me, you know, through our interview, I thought, oh my goodness, that experience alone, I mean, that was over time, right? It wasn't like just one weekend. Over time. And so to give it that capacity over time is a miracle in itself. And showing up over time like that is a miracle in itself. And I was sitting back thinking, gosh, I mean, I don't even know if I could do that. But I feel like when you kind of have this, when you have so many blessings in your life and you have this, I'd call it maybe a great ask from God, like, please go out and create these good works in the world. You find the energy, you have the energy, you have the capacity to go out and change these people's lives. Would you agree?
Yes. It's those who don't hear that and do it. That's the problem. You know, the word that says many are called, few are chosen. I refuse to be that not chosen. And the not choosing is not him not choosing us. It's us not choosing him. And every day I put my arms up. I go out on the deck every morning and say, here I am, Lord, use me. I want to affect the world for him, not for me, because I'm nothing. Trust me. I'm just a vessel, but I want to affect the world for him. And I'm bold and I take risks. And I know the things that he's asking me to do, he's still molding and shaping and getting the things into place, but I'm ready and willing and listening more than ever, listening, because that's where people trip up. They get the vision, they get the dream, then they take off and God's like, whoa, I'm back here. Come back, Jack. I've heard that too many times.
Well, I think what's really gorgeous about your story is that, you know, now you're going to be feeding people in a totally different way, which good, I think is good. Really incredible. Cause we need more of that in this world. We need more of it. So
yes. Yes.
Alright, everyone, I hope you loved meeting Mama Mish and hearing her story of being chosen. Now, I do want you to remember, and it's so very important, we've all been chosen for some special gift that we carry, some special attribute, some incredible trait that we have to be of service to others. Sometimes those invitations are very, very overt, like in Mama Mish's case. And sometimes there are little messages and hints left along the way that are meant to urge us into our greater calling. So take this week to think, what kind of messages or hints or clues have you received out in the waking world, out in your dreams? Where can you potentially step up and be of service? I need to thank Michelle Love for being a guest on the podcast and being so gracious and so wonderful with sharing her stories. To read a little bit more about her mission and who she is, as well as her book, please do click on the link in the episode's show notes. I hope each and every one of you had a really wonderful holiday with family and friends, or even friends who are your family. I certainly did. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to this podcast. With that being said, thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Mama Mish. Be of service to those around you. Be present for your community. Understand that whatever gift or part you have to play in this world, someone out there, something out there needs it. How can you cheer people on? How can you feed those who need to be fed? How can you be present for someone who's really struggling? Dear listeners, go out there and be gifts to the world like Mama Mish, and make this world a more sparkly and beautiful place.